Good morning and welcome to Under the Olive Tree, the Palestinian Canadian Community Radio Show. You are listening to CKET 90.3 FM in Montreal and the hour is 11. Today is December 29th, 2005. We will be with you till noon as usual. Under the Olive Tree is not just a Palestinian community radio show. We have two reasons for our existence. The first is to provide the space, the equipment, and the know-how to Palestinian youth in Canada in order for them to reach our second goal, which is to produce content that truly represents the Palestinian community. If you'd like to join us, or if you have any questions, please email us at uot@ckut.ca. Again, that's uot@ckut.ca. Or give us a call at our landline, area code 514-398-6788. Again, that's air code 514-398-6788. I'm your host for the week, Laith Maarouf. This is the last show of our year. We have a great lineup. Our first interview for the day will be with a Palestinian student by the name of Abdullah, who was in prison for 3 years in the prisons of the Israeli apartheid regime. He speaks to us on his experience and the horrible experience of Palestinian prisoners in general. This interview was conducted by Hanan Amr, our Montreal Collective member. She called Abdullah in the occupied territories. Our second interview is conducted by Aaron Lakoff, who interviewed Hannah Mermelstein, one of the founding members of Birthright Unplugged in Boston. Birthright Unplugged, for those who don't know, refers to the Zionist colonial organization by the name of Birthright Israel that sends Jewish-only students from across North America to occupied Palestine according to their supposed birthright to settle the land of Palestine and steal it from the indigenous people. So Birthright Unplugged is an answer to this racist, discriminatory organization by the name of Birthright Israel. It's an answer to that, and we will listen later on today to the interview conducted by Aaron Lakoff with Hannah. We'll first listen to one song, and it's called Love on the Palestinian Style, Hub ala al-Tariqa al-Falastiniya, and it is a song by Al-Ansar group. It's from a poem by Palestinian poet Abd al-Latif Aqil. It definitely speaks of the love of one Palestinian for Palestine. And for instance, I will read two lines from this poem, and it says, "And when the soldiers smash my head and I drink the coldness of jails, I do not forget you. I love you more." Those are some of the amazing lyrics in this poem. We listen to the song.
جنينه ترجمة
That was Love on the Palestinian Way, performed by Sabrine from a poem by Abdel Latif Aqil, Palestinian poet. We move on to our first interview, and it is with Palestinian student who was imprisoned for 3 years. His name is Abdullah, and the interview is conducted by Hanan Amr, our Montreal Collective member.
Good morning, listeners. Today I'm speaking with Abdullah, a 26-year-old Palestinian living in Jenin. Abdullah was sent to an Israeli prison and spent 3 years, which was his sentence. He is joining us today from Jenin to talk to us about what he lived through during these 3 years and about the effects of his sentence on his present life. This interview is very important because we are actually talking with a Palestinian that went through the hardship of the Israeli occupation. And if we are lucky enough, we will be able to bring you more Palestinian people who will join us on our show to describe to us their experiences with the endless Israeli occupation in the West Bank and in the Gaza Strip. Hello, Abdullah. How are you?
Hi. I'm fine. Thank you.
Okay. I would like to welcome you to our show Under the Olive Tree, the show which is on CKUT in Montreal. So, Abdullah, from what you told me, you spent 3 years in an Israeli prison. Would you tell our listeners how you ended up there? Why were you sent to prison, and what was this sentence for?
Okay. I'm Palestinian. Okay, I born in Jenin, but I used to live outside Palestine. I lived in Amman for a while. So in year 2003, I came here to Jenin for a visit. I spent here about 20 to 30 days. After that, I went back to Amman. While I'm going to Amman, the Israeli arrested me and they put me in jail. So they arrested me for 3 years for political reasons.
Can you be more precise?
Yeah, yani, all I can say that for my opinion, and you know, to Israeli, because you know, to Israeli, anyone who is fighting against them, they called him a terrorism, okay? So that's it, yani. It's about fighting for freedom and also opinions.
When you were in prison, were you able to communicate with your family and friends by phone, or were they able to visit you at the prison?
Okay, first, they put me in a place for 3 months to do investigation. You know, so in this place, I never saw anybody.
Okay.
Only them. Okay, to make investigations with me, and things like this. After that, they sent me out to jail. Here in Palestine, they have maybe about 10. I don't know how many jails. Okay, they put me in one of them. Yani, in jail, the family can visit their children, their sons, okay? But, you know, I told, I think that I told you that my our family is outside. They are not here. They live in Amman.
Okay.
So that's another problem to me that I'm not I didn't saw them all the time where I have been in prison.
So you weren't really able to hear from them, and they weren't really able to hear from you often?
Yeah, it was somehow hard.
It was were you worried about them? How did you feel the fact that you were so far away from them and that you couldn't actually communicate with them?
Yeah, so sure, it was so bad for me. It was so bad for them. You know, it's hard. It's really hard for any person in all the world to be far away from his family, you know, or also his friends, his life, mm-hmm. everything. You know, when they take freedom from someone, it will be really hard for him.
So accordingly, these 3 years have been very difficult for you. And on one hand, it was being cut off from the outside world, being cut off from your school, from your family and friends. Now, can you describe to us, like, what kind of treatment you were actually receiving from the Israeli officials and soldiers within the prison where you served your 3 hard years?
Okay. You know, we can't talk about this much, okay? But, in small word, you can say that they took my freedom, okay? Mm-hmm. About the treatment, you know, they didn't respect the world law about this thing, okay? Mm-hmm. They didn't respect that, you know. There is a law, and there is a law says that when you arrested someone, you should treat him in a good way. All over the time during he is arrested. Okay, but I can say that they didn't respect that. Okay. And they had some bad things to do to all Palestinian prisoners.
Okay, and from these other Palestinian prisoners, did you recognize anybody, like, in your prison? Was there any family or friends that were in prison with you?
Yeah. You know, I met people in prison outside. I didn't know people here, okay? Because I was just only here for a visit, you know.
Yes.
So I didn't have the real chance to know people here, but. In prison, I met people from all over Palestine,
mm-hmm.
I met people whom will stay all his life in prison. He will die there. So, my friends, I had friends when I were in jail.
And how did you feel like when they announced your release, when they told you you could go now? Did you feel guilty that you had to leave your fellow Palestinians in the prison, or you were like, "Oh my God, yes, I'm getting out of here"? Or were you? Did you feel a kind of guilt that you had to leave your fellow Palestinians there?
When they told me that I'm gonna be free, okay, I'll tell you, it's every single person in prison dream,
mm-hmm.
okay. To be outside, the one who they arrested him for 1 month, and the one whom they arrested for whole life. Okay, mm-hmm. Everyone has this dream, and he is praying to God all the time, thinking that someday I'll be out. So, it's sure that. When they told me that I'll be out, I felt happiness. I never, in all my life, felt it. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Also anyone will be, if anyone will, this thing will happen with him, he will feel the same. Because mm-hmm. it's all our dream. So really, it was. I was so happy. Okay, I left people whom I care for there. Okay. Mm-hmm. But also, I'm hoping and praying to them to be out someday. You know?
How did life in general have been for you after you you got out of prison? In other words, did your life get back on track, or was there a very strong impact on your life after you got out of prison?
Yeah. Okay. After I go out of prison, I tried to go to Jordan, Amman, to mm-hmm. continue my studies and to see my family, okay? But the Israelian didn't allow me to, okay? They said to me that you are not allowed to leave this country because you are dangerous to us. They do that to anyone who go out of prison. They didn't allow anyone to leave Palestine, okay? So... they told me that I'm dangerous and I'm not allowed to leave Palestine. Okay, so it's been really hard for me. It's just the same when I was in prison, because when I was in prison I couldn't see my family, and now also I can't see my family. Okay, when I was in prison I couldn't continue my studies, and also now I can't continue my studies. It's really hard. Also, life here in Palestine, it's dangerous and hard. You know, all the time they came to the cities and arrested people and killing people. You know, it's hard to find the job or work to eat from. Until now, I didn't work. Okay, I had a lawyer, okay, to help me to get out of here, okay, to see my family, to see my family to continue my studies, okay. I had to pay to him. Mm-hmm. So, but it's hard for you to find a job or let's say for the daily life. So, also. I had most Palestinians have the same problem. Okay, I had a lawyer. This lawyer will help me. Okay, in Israel there is a court. It's called Mahkamat al-Adl al-Ulya. I don't know. You can translate it. Okay, he will help me to prove that I have to be in Amman to see my family. Okay. I have to continue my studies, so they should let me go to Amman, and I can come back whenever I want because I'm Palestinian. I had a Palestinian ID. They must allow me to leave whenever I want and to come back whenever I want. Okay, so it's the only chance that I had to meet my family again. I saw, from all my family, I saw my mother once, okay? She came here when she knew that I'm out of prison, okay? She came here and spent some time with me. But I didn't see my sisters, my brothers, my father, all of them. I didn't see anyone of them.
And what kind of plans do you have for your coming years, for your future? Do you have any plans?
Yeah, sure. Everyone in the whole world has plans. You know, I have a lot of plans. I wish to after I finished my university studies, my dream was to continue my master's and my master degree. Okay.
And in what kind of studies?
I'm studying marketing.
Okay.
My little dream, okay, is to feel free, to feel freedom. Mm-hmm. Not only me, everyone here, everyone, the whole world, everyone who had occupation in his country, okay, because I lived what they lived in, so it's my dream to feel freedom, okay. So we can all together yellow freedom. You know, it's a great word to say.
And can you tell me a bit of your hopes for Palestine and for the Palestinian population in the future?
Okay, my hopes, you know, we are people. We want peace. No one wants to die. No one wants to see his father or his son or his any relative person to him to see him dying in front of his eyes. Okay, we want peace. We are fighting for our rights. That's all. Okay. I hope. We hope to be like all over the world. Okay. Our children here, they can't feel the holidays, okay? Not the Christian holidays, the Muslims holidays, okay? We can't feel it. Mm-hmm. No one can feel it because every family in Palestine had someone died inside this family, okay? There is no family living happily. Okay, the children cannot feel their holidays. Mm-hmm. So it's small hope, small demands.
And do you have any last words that you would like to add to our listeners here in Montreal?
Okay, first, I'm so happy to talk to your listeners. Okay. I'm so happy that my small words, maybe it will do something or it will change something in their hearts, okay? Because we are Palestinian, we want the world to know what kind of life we are living. Okay, because of occupation. Mm-hmm. Okay, that's it, I think.
Abdullah, I want to thank you so much for joining us on Under the Olive Tree, all the way from Jenin, and we greatly appreciate the time that you have given us. I wish you, your family, your fellow Palestinians, and the whole people of Palestine the best for the Christmas holidays and for everything that will come.
Yeah, thank you. And happy holidays for you all too, all your listeners.
Thank you very much.
S'établir dans une contrée, en devenir résident, se l'approprier, y expulser ses habitants, misérables gens, soumis par droit de conquête et placés sous dépendance politique du conquérant, quête dominatrice à la recherche d'un état, voilà le résultat d'une puissance colonisatrice, c'était de l'Occident, ils ont tué et chassé, se justifie ces terres sacrées par présence d'antécédents. Qui parle d'occupation, parle de résistance. Qui parle de colonisation, parle forcément d'indépendance. Danse entre deux feux, danse dans une salle ou danse entre les balles pour esquiver un couvre-feu. Des animaux courent dans des champs, des hommes sont libres, des animaux sont dans des cages et des hommes sont dans des camps. Vivre comme on l'entend, clôturé dans un enclos. Liberté, pas pour le moment, Oslo est tombé à l'eau. Sanglots, cette vie fait up. J'ai crié, cri, juste le combat d'un peuple qui se bat pour sa patrie. L'Amérique s'est battue pour avoir son indépendance. Les résistants face aux Allemands pour pouvoir libérer la France. Tunisiens et Algériens, eux-mêmes en ont fait autant. Donc les Palestiniens veulent un État au Proche-Orient. Et c'est ça le blême. Toi tu parles de fanatisme. Mais le conflit ne se résume pas qu'à de l'antisémitisme laxiste. Le monde laisse faire et se défile pendant que tu tues des civils et les appels terroristes. On fait mine d'être concernés, mais dans le fond on s'en fout. Regardez sans être outré tant que ça n'arrive pas à nous.
Jeteur de pierre, le monde sait que ton pays est en guerre. Pas d'aide humanitaire vu que les colons te volent tes terres. Et c'est triste, toujours la même morale, les mêmes balles, le même mal, la même spirale. Jeteur de pierre, le monde sait que ton pays est en guerre. Pas d'aide humanitaire vu que les colons te volent tes terres. Et c'est triste, toujours la même morale, les mêmes balles.
That was an interview with Abdullah, a Palestinian student imprisoned for 3 years in the jails of apartheid Israel. He was interviewed by Hanan Amr, our Montreal Collective member, and it was followed by a song by Sniper, a French-Arab rap group, and the title of the song was Jeteur de Pierre, which means the stone throwers. We will go to our second interview, and it's conducted by Aaron Lakoff. And the interview is with Hannah Mermelstein, one of the founding members of Birthright Unplugged. It is an answer to the racist, discriminatory Birthright Israel that sends only Jewish students from North America on what is supposed to be their birthright to settle and steal land from the native Palestinians. It's a very good response from within the Jewish community to extremists that advocate Zionism.
I'm on the phone with Hannah Mermelstein, who is one of the organizers of the Birthright Unplugged tour. She joins us from Boston. Welcome to the program, Hannah.
Thank you.
To get started, can you explain what Birthright Unplugged is for our listeners?
Yes, Birthright Unplugged is an educational project, primarily seeking to expose young Jewish people, mostly North Americans, to realities of Palestinian life under occupation. And we take people, our participants, on six-day trips through villages, cities, and refugee camps, mostly in the West Bank. We actually cross the Green Line into what is now Israel for one day to also visit destroyed villages from 1948. So we get a wide variety of Palestinian experience and meet with a lot of different people.
What do you see as the importance of this trip? It is a trip for Jewish youth designed to bring them into the Palestinian territories. How do you see the importance of this trip for its participants?
I think in the world in general, there is both a lot, and specifically in North America, there's a lot of misinformation about what's happening in Israel and Palestine. And also, there are a whole lot of opportunities for young Jewish North Americans to visit Israel on free trips, fully funded trips, like Birthright Israel, as well as others. And they don't show them anything about the reality of Palestinian life. So it's a trip to Israel to develop a love for the land and the people of Israel, but not at all any of the Palestinian inhabitants of Israel or crossing the Green Line into the West Bank or Gaza Strip. So I think a lot of the people who go on those trips are people who are pretty open-minded, don't necessarily know a lot, are going for the free trip, and probably would be interested in having a more broad and fuller experience. So we provide that for people.
Mm-hmm. And obviously the name Birthright Unplugged is kind of modeled off of that name Birthright Israel, but it's quite different. In fact, you're not affiliated at all with Birthright Israel. Maybe you could kind of compare and contrast in a bit more detail those two experiences, one that someone would get on a Birthright Israel trip versus on the Birthright Unplugged trip.
Well, I myself have not been on a Birthright Israel trip. I have been growing up. I grew up in a labor Zionist youth movement, and I did go to Israel with this youth movement several times. So I think I've done a lot of the similar things to what Birthright Israel does, but I haven't actually been on a Birthright Israel trip. And I want to point out also that Birthright, it's not only a takeoff on the name Birthright Israel, but just the concept of birthright in general, that the concept of a Jewish birthright to this place, even as millions of Palestinian refugees are not allowed to return to their homes, that we just feel it's important as Jewish people to oppose this very strict definition of birthright applying only to Jewish people. In terms of the trips, what I've heard, we started our trips, our Birthright Unplugged trips, last July, and half of the people who came on our trip had just been on a Birthright Israel trip. So what we heard from them is that on Birthright Israel, there's a lot of sort of development of love for the Jewish state, for Israel, for the land, for the country, a lot of touristy things, a lot of building relationships with people, not a lot of serious discussion about politics. So most people said they weren't really inundated with negative images of Palestinians as much as no images of Palestinians. And that's something I think is pretty significant and is also indicative of my experience growing up, is that I wasn't necessarily taught a lot of bad things about Palestinians, just nothing. So it was sort of this completely ignoring and denying the history of the indigenous people. And I think that's a lot of what Birthright Israel does. Now, the other thing to say about Birthright Israel is that they contract out their trips. So each one is different because they are done by different people and different organizations. So some of them are more political than others. Some of them are more outdoorsy. But what they all have in common is that they do not meet with Palestinian people, certainly not in the West Bank at all, and don't learn about life under occupation, and they're missing a huge part of the story.
Birthright Israel, of course, what they've been doing in the past 5 or 6 years of their existence, they've managed to bring thousands of young Jewish people to Israel, and they do get a considerable amount of funding from different Jewish communities throughout the world, and also from wealthy donors. So they're able to do a considerable amount of outreach. I'm curious to know how your program has managed to do outreach and whether you've found considerable support within Jewish communities for what you're doing.
Well, the organization is very new, so that's the first thing to say. Our first trips were in July, and a lot of the outreach has happened word of mouth. We sent out an email announcement, but ultimately all of the people who contacted us had gotten it at least second or third hand or even further. There are people who found out about the trip who told us how they found out, and we have no idea how the people who told them found out about it. So a lot of it has been word of mouth and forwarding of announcements. We are actually currently fundraising also to continue to run the trips. We've only gotten one grant so far. We've also been supported largely by private individual donations, and are just working to sort of keep going. So it's a new organization, and the hard part about, I think, raising money for an organization like this is that a lot of Jewish organizations don't really want to touch it because it deals with Palestinians and is in the West Bank. And non-Jewish organizations tend to, because it's a Jewish project, say, well, there's enough Jewish funding out there for Jewish projects. So that's the quandary we're in. But I think that ultimately, when we do more work on it, we will be financially in a stable position.
Just glancing at your website, birthrateunplugged.org, you and your partner, Dunya, who organize these trips, are coming from very interesting backgrounds as people and also as activists who've been working in the United States, but also in Palestine. Can you talk a bit about your background as a person or as an activist and what led you into wanting to do work like this program?
Mm-hmm. Well, I can do both. I can start as a person. I grew up in a labor Zionist youth movement, which basically means learning the values of both socialism and Zionism. So a lot of the social justice values that I learned were from this youth movement, but also a lot of the Zionist values that I now consider to be contradictory with my social justice values also came from the same place. So I went to Israel several times with Habonim, with this youth movement, and it wasn't really until the Second Intifada in 2000, I was in college, it wasn't really until then that I started to question and find myself in conversations with people that I agreed with on everything else. I was doing social justice organizing around a lot of different issues, and then we would have a split on this issue. And finally, I entertained the idea that maybe I was wrong about some things, and there were things that I hadn't thought through completely. And I looked back, I started to learn more and read different narratives than what I had been exposed to when I was younger, and got to the point where I wanted to express solidarity with Palestinian people, recognizing the power dynamic there, recognizing that Israel is controlling this entire civilian population and they're living under occupation, and that I, as an American and as a Jew, have a big responsibility in that. So I went first with the International Women's Peace Service, and both Dunya and I, that's how we met, is that we were both working with the International Women's Peace Service, which does a lot of human rights and humanitarian work in the Salfit region of the West Bank, as well as supporting Palestinian nonviolent resistance, which takes a lot of forms, but recently has been a lot of demonstrations against the wall, which is encroaching upon that area. It's coming 22 kilometers east of the Green Line into the West Bank. So we did a lot of work with IWPS, and then there were delegations that would come through, and we would lead them around sometimes on day trips around our area. And both of us got to know other areas a little bit more, and through various circumstances had started to lead other delegations on more broader trips around. But neither of us had ever done an explicitly, specifically Jewish delegation before. And we were talking last summer, last July of 2004, about the fact that there are so many opportunities for young Jewish North Americans to come on these fully funded trips to Israel. and that they're specifically targeted for state objectives. And we thought, you know what, some of these people would probably be interested in learning something else. So that's how the idea of Birthright Unplugged was born.
This is a six-day trip, and for $350 American, people get walked through quite an interesting itinerary. Can you take us through those 6 days and give us an idea of what Birthright Unplugged would entail?
Sure. So we meet in Jerusalem, in the Old City, and we have our orientation there. So we do some training, some cultural training, and just sort of getting to know each other and developing the group a little bit. And then we have a talk that's kind of a political briefing from somebody who works with the Palestinian Negotiation Support Unit, who can give sort of this overall political talk that's probably expressing different things than overall political talks that people have gotten either the previous week on other tours or in other education that they've had. So we start with that, and then the next day and that night we have a Shabbat dinner, or if it's not on a Friday, just a dinner with Israeli activists. So we think it's important, although people have been exposed to Israelis a lot, they haven't necessarily been exposed to Israelis who work in solidarity with Palestinians. So we have a dinner and a panel with Israeli activists working on a variety of issues. The next morning we turn to the West Bank, so we go to Bethlehem first, and we spend half of the day looking at Bethlehem as a city that's now three-quarters closed by the wall. So we look at the wall, we take a tour of the wall in the Bethlehem area, and we also spend half the day in the Dehesha refugee camp, which has a lot of really interesting projects going on, and also I think is an eye-opening experience for people to see this is what a refugee camp is, these are the issues that these people are talking about, and this is what they're feeling about everything that's happening. One of the organizations has a circus troupe, so we see them perform their circus acts as well as their improv theater about their daily life. So some of it's funny and entertaining, some of it's really poignant, like the Checkpoint improv theater that they do, for example. And then we stay with Palestinian families in the camp and around the camp in Bethlehem. So we have a homestay, and it's for that night and the next night with the same family, so they can develop some sort of relationship with people. And the next day, we go to Hebron, to Khalil, and that's a city that is very, extremely under occupation in a different way than most of the West Bank, with the exception maybe of Jerusalem, in that settlers are actually living inside the city, inside the same building sometimes as Palestinians, just taking over the top floors. So we have a Palestinian tour guide take us around and just show us the issues for the people living in Hebron. We also visit a family who lives in a neighborhood that's been almost entirely taken over by Israeli settlers, and his kids every day get stoned by the settlers as they go to school. His daughter's 9-year-old daughter, a couple weeks before we got there to visit last time, had been kidnapped by the settlers for about a half hour or so by the settler kids. So some really intense issues that just walking around and meeting people, this is what we're exposed to. So that's day three. And then we go back up to Bethlehem, to Dehesha, and stay with the families again. And day four, we head back towards Jerusalem and have a tour of the wall and settlements in the Jerusalem area. And that tour is given by ICAD, the Israeli Committee Against House Demolitions. So we have this tour, and then we go up to Ramallah. And passing from Jerusalem to Ramallah is an experience all of on its own, which is going through the Columbia checkpoint, which is being more and more institutionalized and made more and more permanent with the structures that are being built and also the wall that's coming up to the checkpoint. So we go into Ramallah, and we meet with a representative from the Palestinian Authority as well as a conflict resolution organization. So those are two meetings that we do in Ramallah. And with the conflict resolution organization, it's young people also, so it's one of the only experiences they get where it's their Palestinian peers that they're meeting, and so we have dinner with this organization. After that, we go back to Jerusalem to sleep. The next day, we go up to the north, and this is the region that Dunya and I know the best because it's where we work with the International Women's Peace Service, and this is the Salfit region. So we go and we visit the International Women's Peace Service. We also visit a family that's completely surrounded by the wall. And we also visit a Palestinian women's organization and girls organization that are working both to fight against the occupation, demonstrations against the wall, and also confidence building and leadership development among themselves within their own society. So we visit with them, and we sleep in that area that night. And then the next day, which is our last day, day six, we go into the, we cross the Green Line for the only time, and we go west of the Green Line into Israel. We go to the Nazareth area and also Ein Hod. Ein Hod is a very interesting village because it was not destroyed in 1948. All of the residents were expelled, but most of the buildings still remain. And a couple of years later, Israelis moved in and established an artist colony there. So it's a Jewish-Israeli artist colony now, and all the Palestinians who were expelled fled to a hill that's a couple kilometers up the hill, still called Ein Hod, their community, and their village was unrecognized until a couple years ago, meaning they didn't have water, electricity, any of these services that the government provides. And so we learn from them, from these internally displaced refugees who may have Israeli citizenship but don't necessarily have the rights that Jewish Israelis have. So we learn about that, and then we go to Nazareth and a village near Nazareth called Seforia, where that has been completely destroyed. So we see a picture from the 1940s of all these houses on the hill, and we go look at the hill, and now it's all these pine trees that have been planted by the Jewish National Fund, which I think is a poignant moment for a lot of the participants of our trip, and was for me the first time I saw it, because I grew up, like many North American Jews, putting quarters in these little boxes in my synagogue that said, plant a tree in Israel. And now I know where those quarters went and where those trees were being built and why. And then we go back to Jerusalem and we have our closing dinner. And we talk about the future, keeping in touch, making commitments for what people feel like they can do, whether it's, you know, organizing something on a campus or just talking to their parents about the experience, whatever it is that people are able to do as they come back to the States or Canada.
And what are you hoping that participants do walk away from the trip with?
We do as much as possible to expose people to the reality of Palestinian life, and we are hoping that people are open enough to experience it. I think it's pretty impossible to spend 6 days hanging out with Palestinians in the West Bank and not have an incredibly moving experience. So we basically just facilitate this experience. We hope that people walk away with more of a sense of truth and honesty about the situation, and a commitment to bringing justice, however they see that justice can be brought. There are different campaigns that I find inspiring in the States that if people, and in Canada, that if people got involved with, we'd be happy, but we're not specifically pushing people in any particular direction with that.
So that's Birthright Unplugged. You have two trips that are coming up in the near future. One is from January 1st to the 6th, 2006. Then the next starts January 10th to the 16th. Can you give us some information how people can get in touch if they're interested in Birthright Unplugged?
Yes, you can visit our website at birthrightunplugged.org, and all of the information about how to apply, the application, and our email address is all on that site.
Okay, great. We've been speaking with Hannah Mermelstein, who is one of the founders of Birthright Unplugged and an organizer, speaking with us from Boston. Thank you so much for being on the phone with us today, Hannah.
Thank you, Aaron.
That was Aaron Lakoff interviewing Hannah Mermelstein, one of the founding members of Birthright Unplugged from Boston. We move to our last song for the day, and it is a song by David Rovix, one of the United States' greatest folklore singers. He sings for Palestine. He sings for Jenin in this song by the title, again, of Jenin. We listen to David Rovix.
Child, what will you remember when you recall your 16th year? The horrid sound of helicopter gunships, rumble of the tanks as they drew near. As the world went about its business, and I burned another tank of gasoline, Dow Jones was lost a couple points that day while you were crying in the city of Janine. Did they even give your parents warning before they blew the windows out with shells? While you hid inside the high school basement, amidst the ringing of church bells, as you watched your teacher crumple by the doorway, and in England they were toasting to the Queen, you were so far from the thoughts of so many huddled in the city of Janine. Were you thinking of the taunting of the soldiers, or of the shit they smeared upon the walls? Were you thinking of your cousin after torture, or Tel Aviv and its glittering shopping malls? When the fat men in their mansions say that you don't want peace, did you wonder what they mean as you sat amidst the stench inside the darkness in the shattered city of Janine? What went through your mind the sight of your mother's vacant eyes as she lay still among the rubble beneath the blue Middle Eastern skies? As you stood upon this bulldozed building beside the settlements and their hills so green, as your tears gave to grim determination amidst the ruins of the city of Janine. And why should anybody wonder as you stepped on board the crowded bus across the Green Line, inside your jacket for the cord? Were you thinking of your neighbor's buried bodies as you made the stage for this scene, as you set off the explosives that were strapped around your waist? Were you thinking of the city of Janine?
That was David Rubix singing for Janine. That ends our show for this week. As I said, this is our last show for the year. So until we meet next year, until we meet under the olive tree, free, free Palestine.
Thank you.